So in this chapter, we're looking at an overview of evolution and microbial evolution as we've considered it thus far. And we're also looking at the evolution of resistance, such as to antibiotics that bacteria can display. And what way we're doing this is first by providing a recap, making sure everybody has a good appreciation of what it is we've talked about so far, and looking at these things, particularly in terms of microorganisms. And then we'll be applying these various concepts as they're relevant to the evolution of antibiotic resistance, especially, as well as resistance more generally. So this is our handy dandy start. So we're looking at the evolution of resistance. And we're also looking at an introduction or reintroduction or overview to microbial evolution generally. And from here, we're going to be moving on to what the core of the course is all about. So this is really the last of our introductory chapters. So here we have an illustration of the acquisition of antibiotic resistance via horizontal gene transfer. Basically, an antibiotic resistance encoding plasmid is acquired by at least some members or one member of a population. Upon the exposure of that population to the appropriate antibiotic, you have selection for those individuals that are resistant here conferred by the presence of this plasmid, and thus you have enrichment for the resistant bacteria. So acquisition of plasmid. Now, these plasmids can carry multiple antibiotic resistance genes, and as a consequence, the antibiotic that needs to be applied or present in order to select for the plasmid actually has some potential to vary across a small number of potential antibiotics that, in fact, the plasmid encodes resistance to. And in this way, the plasmid is able to increase its frequency within a population under a number of different circumstances, not just if a specific antibiotic is present to which it has resistance to. This is, as I noted, is a form of spreading one's bets. It's setting things up so that there are multiple possible payoffs that the plasmid can get and as a consequence, increase its frequency within a population. I say spreading your bets because it's also cost to carry to the carriage of plasmids by bacteria, and in fact those costs should go up the more genes that are present on the plasmid and are expressed from the plasmid. So by having additional genes, multiple genes, there's greater cost to the plasmid, which has the potential to reduce its likelihood of being carried. But the flip side is by providing a number of different phenotypes that might be useful to the bacterium, it has a greater potential that at least one of those phenotypes will be useful to the bacterium and therefore result in selection for retention of the plasmid. So here we have the acquisition of antibiotic resistance via mutation. So you've got a population of microorganisms. They are dividing, they mutate, and you have these different phenotypes within the population. Some of these phenotypes may confer antibiotic resistance. They have underlying alleles. And then you add your selective pressure, in this case, the antibiotic. And what you do is you end up eliminating those bacteria that are sensitive to the antibiotic. And also, with the increasing antibiotic exposure and antibiotic concentrations, you reduce the number of, you reduce the types of organisms until you're just retaining the very most resistant of the bacteria within the population, which is what you see going on right here. So this could be selection via the exposure to an antibiotic, but really it could be selection via exposure to just about anything. What you're seeing here is essentially hard selection. And also it's important to remember that exposure to antibiotics is not necessarily a consequence of human activity. In fact, antibiotics have been around for a lot longer than humans have been around, and bacteria have been evolving resistance to humans to maybe that too. Bacteria have been evolving resistance to antibiotics for a lot longer than humans have been harnessing antibiotics as antibacterial agents. And then it's also important to realize that not all selective pressures are manifest in increased mortality. They also can result in decreased potential to reproduce. independent of mortality. So this is rather complicated, so I'm going to take some time to try to walk you through it. So on the y-axis here, what we have are the number of organisms. I've done the log of the number of organisms just to make it so that the graph is exponential and we can go up in steps of multiple powers of 10. What we have on the x-axis is time. And this one here refers to essentially 10 to the 1. I guess it could be 0. Just a small effect, it should be 0. Oops. The log of 1 is equal to 0. Well, anyway, this is specifying that there's only a single organism at this point, at this horizontal line. And the goal, of course, with treatment with antimicrobials is to reduce the number of organisms to below 1, and therefore you've reduced the population essentially to 0. So if you've got a population, this is its size right here, and that population has some likelihood of mutating to resistance to a drug, or perhaps likelihood of acquiring a plasmid that encodes resistance to the drug, but importantly, we'll just consider it in terms of mutation because that's easier to at least conceptualize. So if the likelihood of mutating to resistance is, say, 10 to the minus 7, so 1 out of every 10 million replications results in a mutation that confers resistance to this particular drug, then if you add the drug before you get any growback of the population, you should reduce the size of the population that much, 10 to the 7-fold, 10 million-fold. So let's say you have a second drug that is being added at the same time. And let's say this second drug, the rate of mutation to resistance to the second drug is also 10 to the minus 7. So 1 in 10 million replications will result in a mutation that that confers resistance to the second drug. We're assuming that there's no cross resistance, so that the resistance mechanisms to the two drugs are completely independent. And also this 10 to the minus 7, or 1 in 10 million, is basically on average. That's how many replications you need before you'll see the mutation to resistance. So if you've got basically two drugs that you've added, then the odds of the bacterium mutating to resistance to both drugs is these 10 to the minus 7 and 10 to the minus 7 mutation rates multiplied by each other, which means that the population will be reduced 10 to the 14-fold. Remember, 10 to the 7 times 10 to the 7 is equal to 10 to the 7 plus 7, or 10 to the 14, which is a lot. And then if you were to add a third drug, and the odds were the same, that the likelihood of mutating to resistance was, again, independent of these others, then there'd be a 10 to the 7-fold drop to where you find a mutation to resistance to the first drug, another 10 to the 7-fold drop until you find a mutant that's resistant to both drugs, and another 10 to the 7-fold drug before you find that you have resistance to all three drugs. Now, at this point, we've dropped the population 10 to the 21-fold, which is a lot. The size of the population inside of an infected animal might be on the order of 10 to 10. So this is many, many, many fold higher. And the idea is that the number of bacteria you would need to have around to have simultaneously these three different mutations is so high that you're never going to get all three. On the other hand, the population may already consist of individuals that are resistant to at least one of these drugs. And so the odds, the population size to result in mutation to all three may be a little bit less. But nevertheless, the point holds that by providing multiple drugs simultaneously, so-called combination therapy, what we're doing is making evolution very, very inefficient. It is often very difficult for an organism to survive hard selection three times over, where it's being hit with population-reducing environmental impacts that are in three different independent ways, so that they have to evolve in three different ways simultaneously, and in fact do so rather quickly. So you're hitting the organisms with three different antimicrobials, and as a consequence, the organisms, the population size that would be required to mutate to all three simultaneously is so high that your result is that no organism mutates to complete resistance, and therefore the population is wiped out. So what you want is a rate of mutation to multiple drug resistance that is less than the reciprocal of the pathogen population size. So if you have a population size of 10 to the 10 organisms, you would want a mutation rate of 10 to the minus 10, which might be accomplished with two drugs, but by supplying three drugs, you've done good overkill, and you perhaps have made up for problems associated with, for example, the potential for all the drugs to together penetrate to every bacterium that they're targeting. So this is showing the converse approach, again using three drugs, but instead of using the drugs simultaneously, the drugs are being used in series. So this actually is what you would want to do if you were trying to have the population effectively, efficiently evolve to multiple drug resistance. You would apply the first drug, and then you would basically select out the resistant organisms, and then you would allow those organisms to grow back, and then you would hit them with the second drug. And now all the population has that first mutation. You've hit them with the second drug. It's only those individuals that have the first mutation and the second mutation, but all of them have the first mutation because the entire population consists of individuals with the first mutation. And so you have reduction in the population size until you just have the individuals that are left that are resistant to the second drug, and then those individuals grow back, and then you can hit them a third time, and all of these individuals are resistant to the first two drugs, and so again you get resistant, you get the dropping of the population down until just those individuals are left that are resistant to the third drug, and then that population grows back and you have a multi-drug resistant bacterium. Remember that the way adaptation works is sequentially. You have a mutation, it increases in frequency within the population, and then that population that more or less entirely has this new mutation associated with it forms the basis of further mutations. And so the population therefore has the original adaptation associated with it, and then will evolve in a second adaptation that simply builds on top of the first adaptation, which is exactly what you're seeing here. First adaptation, second adaptation, third adaptation. If this was cancer, then each of these bumps would represent a remission. This is why you don't want remissions. When you have a remission, you can't use the original drug because all the cancer cells probably are resistant to that drug, since they descended from individuals that were able to resist the drug in the first place. In a homogeneous population, this one here, whether or not it should be one, would be the last cancer cell, virus, or pathogen that is alive in the population. You're not reducing the population size to the point where you have gotten rid of all of these cancer cells, viruses, or pathogens, unless you're using the three drugs simultaneously. If you're using them sequentially, you're simply not doing an effective job of wiping out the population of cancer cells or viruses or pathogens, bacterial pathogens. Instead, as I noted, this is what you do if you want evolution by natural selection to work efficiently. You allow the population to recover between each round of application of selection, in this case, hard selection. So this is why we use multiple drugs, why we use combination therapy when we're treating such things as HIV or tuberculosis or cancer, for that matter, because we're trying to set things up so that we really provide not only overkill for the organism, but setting things up so that the organism has a much less reduced potential to evolve resistance to one or more of the drugs. So now we can move on to a little bit of ecological consideration. So this table walks you through all of the ways in which antibiotic resistance basically can evolve and then impact other things. And we are right here, it says human back there. And so there's lots and lots and lots and lots of reservoirs of antibiotic resistance. Some of these are a consequence of our own actions, others are simply antibiotic resistances in there, such as soil. And that's the way it's been for a long, long, long time, billions of years. So if resistance, well, maybe not billions of years in the case of soil, let's say millions of years, hundreds of millions of years. For resistance to be acquired by mutation in a human pathogen, then the organism involved either must be a human pathogen or it must become one. So in other words, there's only one way that mutations there's only one way that mutations from this reservoir are going to find their way into the human flora. And that is if these organisms themselves find their way into the human flora. So if you have, for example, a mutation that provides antibiotic resistance due to a change in the target, a chromosomal resistance mechanism, unless that organism is already a human pathogen or evolves into a human pathogen, its antibiotic resistance is not going to affect us. However, if the resistance mechanism is extrachromosomal associated with the plasmid, then the means by which this antibiotic resistance can make its way into human among human flora is by horizontal gene transfer. And that's a much larger concern because the ability of these plasmids to move around between different types of bacteria is actually rather high. And so it is, in fact, quite possible for antibiotic resistance to evolve in soil or wildlife or food animals, and then for the genes that conferred that antibiotic resistance extrachromosomally to find its way into a human pathogen by horizontal gene transfer. Keep in mind that resistance is not just a response to human activity, since antibiotics, more or less by definition, are naturally occurring agents. The reason I said that it hasn't been billions of years that they've been evolving in soils is because really land organisms and therefore soil has not been around for billions of years, but certainly these organisms have been around for a half a billion years at least. This is a list of different microorganisms from which antibiotics are isolated. These, by and large, are soil microorganisms where you find antibiotics, at least where we isolate the antibiotics. So Bacillus is a soil bacterium, Streptomyces is a soil bacterium, Penicillium is a decay-associated fungus that's, if found directly in soil necessarily, is certainly found near soil in the course of decay of such things as, say, oranges. So unlike the antibiotic ecology figure, which I showed a few slides back, this really is a table. And in fact, it is a table that can be described as a 2x2 matrix. And we're going to be seeing all too many 2x2 matrices in this course. And so this is going to be our introduction to the concept of 2x2 matrices. Unfortunately, it's also a complicated one, and it doesn't tell quite as straightforward a story as one would hope. But I will try to walk you through it nonetheless. It's all based upon ideas of cooperation and defection, and here cooperation and defection have to do with the use of antibiotics. Specifically, cooperation is the lack of abuse of antibiotics, and defection in this case would be abuse of antibiotics. So if you're using antibiotics in moderation, then you're a cooperator within a human society. And if you're not using antibiotics within moderation, then you can be seen as a defector. So we've got two groups here, and each one has two possible choices. You can either be an individual that uses antibiotics with moderation, responsibly, or you can be an individual that does not. Or the society as a whole, which the individual's a part of, can use antibiotics with moderation or not, or there can be abuse of antibiotics. And so we can walk through these various things and look at at who benefits and what the costs are and all those sorts of things. And so we'll start down here where there's an individual that uses antibiotics without moderation, And they do so within a society that, in fact, does use antibiotics in moderation. So these are defectors within groups of cooperating individuals. And so we can describe these individuals as unilateral defectors, or displaying a behavior of unilateral defection. Now, we'll be talking about payoff values that come from these behaviors. And this T here represents the payoff value associated with unilateral defection. The T stands for temptation to defect. So if everybody else is using antibiotics in moderation responsibly, then there won't be a great deal of antibiotic resistance evolving. And as a consequence, the organisms are going to be susceptible to antibiotics. So this antibiotic abuser can basically get some bang for their antibiotic buck when they're abusing their antibiotics. In other words, when they use their antibiotics, chances are the organism they're using the antibiotics against will be susceptible to those antibiotics, because we're not willy-nilly evolving antibiotic resistance in the population or ecosystem as a whole. Now, let's go to this one here. So this is mutual defection. And so this is a P, and that's the punishment for mutual defection. So here we've got a society that abuses antibiotics, and within that society you've got a specific individual who abuses antibiotics. There's going to be a lot of individuals that abuse antibiotics within a whole society that abuses antibiotics. So what's the cost? What's the consequence of antibiotic abuse? The consequence is evolution of antibiotic resistance. And that means that when this individual goes to abuse their antibiotic, they're going to not have an antibiotic that's necessarily effective against the organisms that they're trying to treat, because there'll be a large amount of evolution of resistance. So target organisms less likely to remain antibiotic susceptible, thereby reducing the antibiotic utility when that is needed. Now, what about if you have a society that abuses antibiotics, but an individual that is a cooperator and doesn't abuse, who does use antibiotics responsibly as opposed to not responsibly? So in this case, this individual they're trying to be good, but they're not really having all that much of an impact on the evolution of antibiotic resistance. So they are displaying unilateral cooperation, but it's a kind of pathetic effort. They're not really going to impact the evolution of antibiotic resistance all that much. Now, if everybody used the antibiotics in moderation, well, that'd be a different thing. That'd be this up here, but that's not the case here. In this particular instance of this 2x2 matrix, talking about things in this way, we really don't have too much more to say about the costs of this individual's being unilateral in their cooperative behavior. We can also have an individual that cooperates, that uses antibiotics responsibly within a society that uses antibiotics responsibly. And here you have the benefit that there's going to be a reduced evolution of resistance, although that's seen here as well. This individual can't take advantage of this reduced evolution of resistance to the same extent as this individual can, because these individuals don't use antibiotics all that much. Though when they do, the antibiotics will be potentially more likely to be useful than the same individual in this environment. But this individual actually does have a gain, and this gain is that the use of antibiotics actually is potentially harmful to us, although people don't usually talk about this the use of antibiotics in this way, because not only do antibiotics kill target organisms, but they also can disrupt normal flora, and that can have bad things can occur as a consequence of that. When you've got individuals that among themselves are all cooperating, we call that mutual cooperation. This is the R stands for reward for mutual cooperation. Unilateral cooperation, we call that S, that's the payoff value, and that's called the sucker's payoff. Now together, this defines sort of what can be described as a game of chicken. In a game of chicken, you have two individuals driving towards each other, and the winner of the game of chicken is the one who doesn't swerve. So let's see if I can present that. So you're driving together, and one of them swerves, And the individual who doesn't swerve wins. And what they win is, you know, they get prestige and all that for being braver and blah, 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 blah. So there's a temptation to defect. And defecting here would be not swerving. And that's the big payoff. And in mutual cooperation, both swerve, so there's no collision. So that's a good thing, too. And in unilateral cooperation, okay, you swerved, and you know people are making fun of you for that, but at least you didn't die. And then the worst possible thing is mutual defection, where neither individual swerves, and you have a crash, and both individuals die. And that's a game of chicken. And in the game of chicken, the worst possible thing is to be one of a mutual defector because you die. And so we can arrange these payoff values such that T is greater than R, is greater than S, is greater than P. It's better to be a unilateral defector than a mutual cooperator. Let's see, a unilateral defector than a mutual cooperator. Both of them are swerving. Than a unilateral cooperator. So that's this individual. Than it is to do this. And this is kind of what's going on in the world today, where we have a cross-society abuse of antibiotics, and it's not doing anybody any good. And anybody who is to any way dependent upon antibiotics actually functioning in their lives, there's not going to be a whole lot of antibiotics that are going to be functional if we keep going down the road we're going down, although there is some hope. And so I'm not going to claim in this instance that this is a little messy, that T in fact is bigger than R, but S is bigger than P. At least the S individual is not as dependent upon antibiotics in their lives as this individual. And so we have a game of chicken. We're really playing chicken, literally, with our antibiotic supply, with what antibiotics that we have available to us. We're not swerving when we ought to swerve. We're not being conservative. We're not going out of our way to keep bad things from happening. And as a consequence, we're going to have a serious collision, a crash, that is basically associated with those increasing rates of antibiotic resistance that we see in the organisms that are pathogens. And remember, it's not the antibiotic resistance that makes a disease-causing organism cause a disease. The disease will be caused regardless. It's our ability to treat the infection once it's begun that is lost out when we have antibiotic resistance. And the result can be mortality, and the result also can be morbidity associated with, for example, chronic, long-term, many, many years, if even decades, infections by antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So I mentioned that there are some upsides associated with not taking antibiotics, and one of them is the avoidance of antibiotic-associated sequelae. So sequelae are basically diseases that come after other diseases. And one of the important ones is this antibiotic-associated Clostridium difficile infections, or C. diff, where you basically take antibiotics, you wipe out the normal flora to a degree in your gastrointestinal tract, and C. diff is not wiped out, and basically sees an opportunity and takes over, produces toxins, and you've got nasty, nasty, nasty gastroenteritis. Another example of antibiotic-associated superinfections, as these are called, are candida yeast infections, vaginal yeast infections, where you knock down the bacteria associated with the with the vagina, which normally are keeping the pH in the vagina low, high acidity, and that keeps the candida at bay. You knock out the bacteria with these antibiotics, and the candida overgrows, and thus you have a yeast infection. It can be more subtle than that, though. Here's an argument from Blazer in 2011 showing a correlation between the number of courses of antibiotics taken by children and the likelihood that these children, in fact, are going to develop inflammatory bowel disease. So inflammatory bowel disease, another thing that's going on in the gastrointestinal tract, in the colon, And what we have is something that may be associated with disruptions of normal flora bacteria, which is something that can happen when you're treated with antibiotics. So what if we could kill off pathogenic bacteria without disrupting our normal flora? And what if we could kill off pathogenic bacteria without abusing antibiotics and running out of antibiotics as a consequence? Well, it turns out that there is a technology that's been around almost 100 years that may just fit the bill of being something that is very specific for the organisms that are being treated, and also is very available in a high variety, and so therefore very easy to isolate, very easy to discover. And potentially inexpensive, although that might be an actually downside so far as economic development is concerned. And this thing is called phage therapy. So phage therapy is using the viruses of bacteria to treat bacterial infections. So these viruses are lytic. They blow the bacteria apart. When they destroy the bacteria, they're actually making and releasing more of their own type, which can go on to kill other bacteria and so on and so on and so on. It turns out that there is a very robust history of use of phage therapy in certain parts of the world, most notably Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. And so here's just examples that I had pulled off of the web. Nasal abscess, treat it with phages. Basically, you're going to be injecting phages in there, I suppose. And we get complete healing of this poor little baby's forehead. So phage therapy broadly is the control slash killing of nuisance bacteria using phages. And this is a foot ulcer. It's basically a wound that won't heal. These things get infected. They often are associated with the disease diabetes. And it's really difficult to successfully treat these types of infections, these chronic infections, much less get the skin to heal. And this is following treatment with phages. The phages are almost miraculous in their ability not only to kill the bacteria they're targeting, but also to promote healing in ways that antibiotics are not capable of promoting healing. And I'll finish this lecture by just pointing out that this was my triumph of the summer. This would be the summer of 2013 when I learned that the number one downloaded paper from a journal that I apply to called that I submit to called Bacteriophage turns out to be my own paper. Amazingly enough, by far and away, something like threefold higher, more downloads than any other paper that was published in this journal. Admittedly, the journal has not been publishing for very long. They're in their third year right now, this being 2013. But at any rate, this is my paper, and it's very much on the subject of phage therapy. And if you're interested in phage therapy, then this is actually, I think, a fairly good overview of the use of phages to treat human infections.